Okay, it's phone time. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your questions with our guest, Graham Hancock, who's live in London, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Graham Hancock. Graham, the research that you put into the book Supernatural, based on your other works, as you talk about you want to evolve, do things differently, was this pretty dramatic for you, a pretty dramatic change?
It was a very dramatic change. Of course, there are elements in common with my previous books. I am looking into a great mystery of the human past. It's just that it's much further back than the issue of a lost civilization. But as I got deeper and deeper into this investigation, I found that it did have a truly dramatic effect on me and on the way that I look at reality and on the my approach towards the mystery of life. I'd always felt anyway that life is an extraordinary mystery, but the experiences that I have been through researching Supernatural and the information that I have gathered has convinced me that that is the case. Our lives are deeply mysterious, and we only understand a tiny fraction of what is going on. The tools are available for us to understand more. But for some reason, in Western society, we've turned our backs completely on such techniques, and those are the techniques that are used by shamans all over the world, and that have been used by shamans for tens of thousands of years.
Do you know of, or have ever heard of, anything happening to a shaman in one of these altered states?
Yes. Sometimes bad things can happen to shamans, and that would happen if they encounter and get into a conflict with a negative or evil spiritual being.
Almost like an exorcism, isn't it?
Almost. Well, in some ways it's different, because in the case of an exorcism, you have an individual in this world who is possessed by a spirit from the other world. In the case of shamans, they are sending their spirit from this world into the other world, so the balance of power changes. The shaman is much more in control of the situation. The shaman is not possessed. In fact, he is very often in a position to give orders to spirits and to instruct the spirits as to what to do. But sometimes it can go wrong, and there have been disastrous effects. And as a matter of fact, during one shamanic initiation that I witnessed in South Africa, I saw a healthy man in his mid-40s die.
Oh my God.
And that happened, they said, because the spirits had taken his soul. He just dropped dead on the spot.
To the phones we go. Let's go to our wild card line. You are on the air with us. Hello there.
Good evening.
Hi.
George, Graham, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
George, real quick, in the movie Contact, if you replace the huge falling apparatus that Jodie Foster sat in with her taking a hit of DMT, the movie makes more sense.
True. You're absolutely right.
And, George, next time Major Ed Dames claims that he's looking for a repeatable target to remote view the alien, ask Ed to remote view the DMT molecule. Mr. Graham, I've got all your books. I love your work. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you if you've heard of Terrence McKenna's video Alien Dreamtime.
Yes, and, of course, I've heard and know a great deal about Terrence McKenna and the late, great, wonderful Terence McKenna. That man was a gift to this planet, and sadly he was taken from us prematurely by a brain tumor.
Sure.
Terence McKenna did extraordinary work, and I do report on his work in Supernatural.
If tryptamines caused our imagination to create all the unnecessary accessories we're surrounded by, from high heels to religious garbs and ceremonies, if religion at its core is an expression of human imagination, it seems religion has been co-opted by a salesman who's not comfortable with his own imagination nor a woman's imagination. It's kind of a self-castration to stop the story or this waking dream from changing, from competing to sharing, meaning sharing the experience and not just selling an old story of a mystic in a cave having the experience. Thanks.
I think you're making a very important point there, and I'd like to pick up on a couple of points you make there. I have no doubt, and there's two chapters in my book that look at this in detail, that the origins of all religions lie in altered states of consciousness, sometimes very far back in the past. Just to take the case of Christianity, let's consider the position of St. Paul on the Damascus Road and the extraordinary altered state of consciousness experience he has, the blinding light, which transforms and changes his life. I think what happens is that the initial impulse of a religion comes from direct experiences that extraordinary people have in altered states of consciousness. But very quickly, within one or two generations, the bureaucrats step in and start running the religion on a power trip in order to promote their own power in society. And those individuals who claim to be the sole intermediaries between us and the spirit world, who hijack that role, actually have no spiritual contact whatsoever. And this is the sickness of modern religions. Though their roots do lie in direct experience of the spirit realm, all too often in the modern world, those religions have been hijacked by bureaucrats and politicians and money men who run the religions entirely for their own material purposes. And that's the sad state of the world we live in today.
All right. Thank you for that call. First time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, it's a privilege. Good show again tonight, George.
We're on a roll.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Mr. Hancock.
Thank you.
I would like for you, if you can, in a allotted amount of time you have, to expand on your 2% theory, if you will.
Yes. The first thing to understand is that our brains are electrochemical jellies, really. Every experience that we have is mediated through the electrochemistry of our brains. That does not mean that the experience can be reduced to the electrochemistry of our brains. It may mean that the electrochemistry is what we need to allow experiences through. Now, most of us have the electrochemical balance of our brains set on what Rick Strassman calls channel normal, so that we can function as industrious and competitive individuals in the material, physical world. But the evidence suggests that around 2% of every population, it doesn't matter whether it's the United States, Britain, Japan, wherever you go, have their brain chemistry at a slightly different level of tuning, and those individuals are able to enter altered states of consciousness spontaneously, and it is only in those altered states of consciousness that we can access these other realms and beings. So these are the fortunate, or perhaps some might say in some societies, the unfortunate individuals who find their consciousness projecting into the other world, into the spirit world, almost accidentally, out of control, just by chance. It can happen at any moment through the electrochemistry of their brains. For the rest of us, if we want to access those spiritual realms, then we have to change the electrochemical balance of our brain. We have to shake up its absolute commitment to channel normal, and we have to allow in the other realities. And the shamans around the world have developed a range of techniques for doing this. And one of them is the use of sacred plants, the plant hallucinogens, but as I mentioned earlier in the discussion, there are many other techniques as well. It seems to be all about the receiver wavelength of our brain, and just as a TV set can be retuned to pick up other stations, so our brains can be retuned to pick up other stations, and some of us, that 2%, have the ability to do that spontaneously.
Wonderful. My husband, who has just recently passed, thank you very much. He could do this. He also, if you will, subscribed to what he called a 2% theory.
Yes.
He said along with this that those people who could spontaneously go into an altered state of consciousness, that those very possibly had been on the wheel much, much longer. My husband was a Taoist. Much, much longer than perhaps the rest of us. And that was a contributing factor as to why we could do that. He also had an interesting theory concerning what our scientists call junk DNA. He said that those were all memories.
Yes.
Because
sounds very close to my work in a number of areas.
Wonderful. It's confirmation for me, especially confirmation from him.
Thank you.
But he also said that he would often tell me he died of an illness, and during his times whenever he could sit and visit with me, he would tell me about being on a planet that was dying. And he was ready to, he was preparing to leave. And that was of an ancient memory.
Yes.
That he had.
Yes.
And tonight this is, it is almost like speaking, like you were speaking with him and he was speaking with you the whole night.
I'm so pleased to hear you say that. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I think we're touching on the edge of a tremendous mystery here, and that it's beholden on all of us to explore that mystery, as your husband clearly did, rather than to simply ignore it, as so many scientists and skeptics want us to do.
You know, Graham, I tried to get Jacques Vallée on the program several months ago, and
yes.
He just doesn't want to talk anymore. Whatever has happened to him in his career, he just wants to put it all behind him now, and
yes.
It's frustrating and puzzling to me.
Yes, I find it puzzling too, because Jacques Vallée, in his now unfortunately out of print book, Passport to Magonia, did a fantastic breakthrough work comparing the beings that were called fairies and elves in medieval Europe and the beings that we call aliens today, and showing absolutely that they are the same beings. And to that I've added the spirits that shamans communicate with. But for some reason, having made that astonishing breakthrough and put it into the public consciousness back in 1969, Jacques Vallée really never returned to this earlier inquiry. There were some compilations of his work which touched on it again, but he never went into it again in depth and in detail. Perhaps he learned something that
frightened him, or something
that was scary made him feel that he wouldn't go further. Perhaps he suffered such a hostile and negative reaction from the down-to-earth, literalist, materialist scientific community that it was just too difficult. I don't know. We can only speculate on that. It would be great if Jacques Vallée himself would speak on the matter. But the wonderful thing that he did was he put a new idea into our culture, and that idea is still there, and it's possible to explore it and develop it further. And that's one of the things that I decided to do in Supernatural, was to take that inquiry that he let go of in 1969 and to add to it all the new evidence that has become available since then, and the results really are astonishing. But I want to pay tribute to Jacques Vallée and to the wonderful work that he did, and I wish some publisher would put his book back into print.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Sure, Michael.
Dr. Hancock, you mentioned the work of Rick Strassman.
Yes.
And also Francis Frick.
Yeah.
And we, of course, know that special legal or legislative kinds of dispensations had to be provided to Rick Strassman to do his research.
That's right.
And that brings up a great question with regard to the whole progress of science in this area and its relationship to legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Our host, George Norrie, has been one of the bravest men in America in regards to a subject of dealing with our own recognized and accepted shamans here in the United States, the shamans of the pharmaceutical industries, the big pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Now, what this audience needs to know, and I'd like to know how this relates to your work in Great Britain,
mm-hmm.
but what this audience needs to know at times like this, when we have a Supreme Court justice we have a man who's nominated to enter the Supreme Court and become 11.11% of the voting power of the third branch of government in the United States. Why should we not, as an audience and as Americans, be bombarding our senators, and especially the Judiciary Committee at this time, on critical questions like what we are hearing a lot of rumors about, mandatory flu vaccinations and its relationship to the next nominee. Because here's the issue. If during 1918 we were not allowed to ask the question, what was the relationship of the distribution of food at that time through the Catholic Mass and the great worldwide epidemic that came about, that same kind of bias against honest, intelligent, scientific inquiry to solve our problems, while on the other hand, we are being led into a mass-like acceptance of mandatory inoculations of some shamanized...
We are being led into the abyss. I wouldn't call the representatives of Big Pharma shamans. I would call them merchants of death.
They're opposite shamans.
They're not shamans at all. They're merchants of death. But you're touching on a very interesting point, because government has got itself involved in our societies in the control of individual consciousness. We have actually legislated about what experiences people may and may not have with their consciousness. And if people choose to have experiences with their consciousness that go against that legislation, then they can be sent to prison. At the same time, our big pharmaceutical companies are pushing psychiatric drugs like Prozac and Ciroxat onto the mass of the population. Millions of people are taking these drugs and having their minds numbed as a result. And this is the same system of government that will put us into prison if we experiment with our consciousness with plant hallucinogens that have been in use in human society for tens of thousands of years. It's clear that there are vested interests involved in this situation, and that our societies, through our governments, are seeking to take complete control of the consciousness of the population. This is a very insidious, very dangerous situation. It reminds me of the Spanish Inquisition, and I think Big Pharma is leading us down the road to perdition.
And you know what? It's been going on since the beginning of mankind. They've always tried to put their thumb on top of people.
Yeah, they don't want people to have direct experiences. Every experience must be controlled through bureaucracies and big power organizations and the money man. And most of us have been so brainwashed by the propaganda that surrounds these issues that we don't even think it's a problem anymore. It's a huge problem. It's a gigantic problem. We need to take control again of our own consciousness. If we do not own and control our own consciousness, then we own nothing. It's an extraordinary invasion of human rights that adults are not allowed to experiment with their own consciousness with shamanic plants that have been in use by human beings and have been producing beneficial effects for tens of thousands of years. Instead, we have a climate of fear and dishonesty and false propaganda surrounding these substances, and that is connected to the interests of the big pharmaceutical companies.
Stay with us. We'll be back with final questions with our special guest tonight, the legendary Graham Hancock, right here. He's live in London. I'm in Los Angeles, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we'll wrap it up by taking your phone calls. It'll be our final segment right here on Coast to Coast AM, so don't touch that dial. Hey, Grant, before we take the final phone calls, give me your take, your reaction to, of course, the global flood and all the different stories that have surrounded that.
Well, that goes back to an earlier phase of my work, particularly to Fingerprints of the Gods and my last book on the lost civilization subject, which is called Underworld. I don't think it's any mystery that we have a universal myth of a flood, that all cultures, almost all cultures at any rate, remember a great flood that destroyed a great civilization, because at the end of the Ice Age, 12,500 years ago, there were precisely such floods, devastating floods, and sea level rose by more than 400 feet, and 10 million square miles of the best land on Earth was swallowed up by the sea at that time. I think these are memories of real events.
Okay, back to the phones we go.
Can, before we do,
Yes.
Can I just mention again, because I know we'll be in a rush at the end of the show, I am giving two lectures in the United States, one on the 12th of November, one on the 17th of November, and details of those lectures are on my website, www.grahamhancock.com, on the Supernatural page. So if anybody wants more information on that, and also how to get this book in the United States, at the moment it's not available on in the bookshops, Supernatural, but it will be available through Amazon.com and Amazon.ca in Canada. Just search Graham Hancock, Supernatural.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for holding.
Mr. Hancock, how you doing? What an honor.
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, I'm on a cell, so I hope my signal's coming through. I have the first thing I'd like to suggest is perhaps you could do a round table with Maurice Cotterell,
yes,
and David Icke.
Mm-hmm.
And of course yourself,
mm-hmm,
and then maybe Lawrence Gardner, and you could all talk about perhaps the multidimensional aspect of consciousness. You know,
I hope Jeremy Nabe would be invited to that round table as well. Jeremy Nabe, author of The Cosmic Serpent, a wonderful author and investigator.
Yes, I'd like to put one notion forward, if I may, and. It's taken me about 44 years to figure it all out, but everything of a metaphysical or a mystery school nature is in the Bible. You just have to know how to spot it.
Sure.
And instead of going to the plants or thinking that the answer to the matrix is outside of you, if you just remain a good, holy, clean, and sovereign person, then the mountain starts to come to you, and you have to go to the mountain. And as you see the synchronicity and the coincidences of your life story, by simply being clear, you activate the DMT molecule in your pineal gland, but most importantly, you activate your heart chakra. You start caring about plants and animals and people. And there's a responsibility being in a body that you may have to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to close by getting your comments. There's two subjects on the show that come up often. One of them is about culling the Earth's population and the pharmaceutical boys and the secret societies and going back to the old Austrians and all of that. And the other one is Earth changes. Do you think the crop circles could be a foreboding of Earth changes, and that the pharmaceuticals with the avian flu and the heavy boot of authoritarianism is preparing us? It's a misdirection to keep our eyes off the Earth changes. And thank you for listening to all that.
Well, just to pick up your point, all I know for sure is that our civilization is marching blindfold into the abyss right now. We need a big change to be made in our own consciousness and in the way that we approach our lives and in the way that our societies function. We have to take back control of our own societies and stop this juggernaut that is destroying the world. So if there are to be Earth changes, it may well be that those Earth changes will come through human darkness and human folly and human ignorance.
You're going through a metamorphosis, Graham, aren't you?
Yes.
I can tell. Well, in just the years I've talked to you, I can tell.
Yeah. You're right.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, George. This is Joseph in Harrisburg, PA.
Joseph, thank you.
Hi, Mr. Hancock.
Hello there.
I would like to touch on the UFO thing, if I could.
Sure.
Do you believe, then, it's all within the mind and what anyone has ever seen is not real?
No. I believe that what is seen is real, but I also believe that we see it through our consciousness, just as we see everything else through our consciousness. It is real. We just have to change the level of tuning of our consciousness in order to access these absolutely real experiences. Every experience we have, even eating a potato, involves our brains and our minds. What we have to do is take our focus off the mundane and everyday and material and physical aspect of life and refocus our consciousness on other aspects of life below the level that is normally accessed by normal consciousness, or rather above that level. So no, I believe that these experiences are real, but that if we want to access them in a systematic manner, then we need to use altered states of consciousness in order to do that. We will not access them in normal, everyday, alert, problem-solving consciousness. And if we try to do so, we will fail.
Well, but what I'm saying is if I experienced a UFO sighting, I could physically touch it?
Yes, your consciousness could touch it, because it seems that our consciousness, once out of the body, takes on a body of its own. And it could touch you.
When I was a teenager, I had several UFO sightings, and they were as real as seeing an airplane in the sky.
I believe you saw something real. I believe you were privileged to see something real that most people in a normal state of consciousness cannot see. I absolutely agree with you. I think these experiences are real. I think we need to redefine our understanding of reality. We have to stop thinking that that the only real things are things that exist in this material physical dimension. There may be other dimensions which we can gain access to, which are also real and which we do not fully understand. And I think UFOs are one manifestation of that crossover between other dimensions and this dimension. But both of the dimensions are real.
Well, what I was trying to say was that the experiences that I had, and others were with me when I experienced them, they were of this realm. They were of the physical realm. They weren't something...
How can you be sure that they didn't simply manifest in this physical realm, but come from another realm?
Well,
are you saying that they were generated by this realm, the same realm that makes potatoes and motor cars, or are you saying perhaps that they came from another realm and projected into this realm?
No, they're as real as the potato and the automobiles.
I'm not denying their reality, but are you saying that they're something just produced by the earth, this physical earth, and that there's nothing else beyond this physical earth? What is your belief on that? Do you believe?
No, I'm saying they came from somewhere else. They were a UFO from somewhere else, not here. But they
not
were
here,
physical,
exactly. Now, how do you know where that somewhere else is, or what that somewhere else is?
Could it be that
somewhere else is another dimension rather than another planet in this physical universe?
Oh, I don't know what dimension they may have come from. All I'm saying is that they presented a physical presence.
I agree with you on that.
In front of me.
There's massive evidence for the presentation of a physical presence in this universe of beings and objects from other dimensions, and I do report that evidence in my book. I'm not arguing with you about the reality of these experiences. I'm only arguing about the techniques that we need to use in order to access these experiences. And you were lucky enough at that moment to be able to access these experiences.
All right, good. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's move on. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
April from Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Was wondering if... Hancock. Oh, good morning. Sorry.
Speak up.
Hi, good morning.
Speak up, April.
What do you know about receiving names from beings in an astral plane after having an abduction of some kind?
Receiving what from beings, sorry?
Names.
Names.
Yes.
Many shamans who enter the other world, just as UFO abductees enter the other world, in their experiences, are given another name in the other realm. It's extremely common for a shaman in an altered state of consciousness to return from his out-of-body journey and report that he has been given a new name by the spirits who he encountered, and that this new name is a vital and important part of his identity. And in fact, in the story of Ibogaine that is told by the Pygmies in Central Africa, the individual involved in that also receives a new name from the spirit world. So I think there's something very much in common between these experiences that you're reporting with UFO abductees.
Wow. Because it's strange, because I got the name and I looked for it online everywhere trying to figure out what this name actually means.
Mm-hmm.
And I used it as a screen name because I like to go into the paranormal rooms and everything
mm-hmm.
online. And this guy from Hawaii...
What is that name? Will you tell us?
Akia.
Atia.
Akia.
Sounds good.
A-K-E-A, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But he said it means beings of light or
yeah.
light bringer, and I about went cold. Because
beings of light.
Yeah, because that's
now
the
you're giving me the shivers, because during my experiments with altered states of consciousness in the Amazon, drinking the shamanic brew, ayahuasca, the first beings that I encountered on my out-of-body journeys were beings of light. They glowed like, their faces glowed as though they were lit up with neon.
They were healers or something, because every time I had a dream about them, I was sick.
Yeah.
I would feel better. It was unbelievable.
Well, that's very interesting because
yes,
also one of the side effects of ayahuasca is that it does cause terrible nausea as well.
Oh. Okay.
So, interesting. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate you being part of the problem. And the ayahuasca that you take.
Yeah.
And again, you recommend that you are taking it with a shaman.
Absolutely. I think this is vitally important.
It's idiotic if anybody takes it by themselves, even if they go to the Amazon, right?
Yeah, very bad mistake. First of all, they're likely to get the dose totally wrong. And secondly, the experiences that they will have will be so at first so disorienting and so terrifying that it may disturb them extremely badly. The only way to reduce that disturbance, that disorientation, is to take the ayahuasca in the company of an experienced shaman who is the master of that other realm. And he or she, because there are female shamans as well in the Amazon, will ground you and help you through the experience. After you have repeated the experience many times, you might get to the point where you would be in a position to take it on your own and where you become effectively a shaman yourself. But for beginners with ayahuasca, it's vitally important to take the substance with the shamans who know what they're doing. And I should add that throughout the Amazon region, whether we're talking about Peru or Brazil or Ecuador, the consumption of ayahuasca is protected under laws of religious freedom. This substance is not illegal in those countries. It is totally legal because they believe that it is a substance that provides access for our consciousness to the spirit realms. They believe that it's a religious issue, and they believe that every individual has the right of religious freedom. So fortunately, in those countries in the Amazon, these substances are not illegal. And taking them illegally in our countries also adds to the terror and the discomfort of the experience. So all in all, I would urge nobody to take this substance unguided. The best place to take it, if it's possible to put together the funds, is to go to the Amazon and take it there. And there you will find shamans who are willing to work with you and feel indeed that they have a mission to work with people from the West to reintroduce us to the spiritual realms that we have cut ourselves off from.
What does it do to your dreams later? Anything?
There's a curious interaction with dreams, and I have revisited these realms in dreams. And sometimes when I'm lying at the edge of sleep, the characteristic visions of ayahuasca begin to impinge on my mind, and I sense that I'm slipping over again into that other realm. So it did make a permanent change, I would say. In my consciousness, but a permanent and very positive change, and one that I welcome and believe has been of great value to me.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Mr. George Norris. Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I'm from New Jersey, but I'm in upstate New York right now. I'm in Hudson making a delivery. I'm going to make it quick because there's a lot of background noise. I'm loading the trailer.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for taking my call. I'm a new listener. I'm a truck driver, so you taught me to stay awake at night because it's a pretty boring ride up to Mid-Hudson.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say to Mr. Hancock, I have one of your books. My girlfriend introduced me to your writing, your research. We have Fingerprints of the God. But the one thing that bothers me, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but one of the things that bothers me about European or researchers, people who don't acknowledge that they have African descent, you tend to refer to Africans as pygmies. There is no section in Africa called pygmy. I'm just wondering why is. I mean, I know there are many different tribes.
Well, I'm sorry. There are pygmies in Central Africa, and they are highly dignified people with their own culture and their own ancient history, and they do refer to themselves also as pygmies. It's just a general word in the language. They happen to be very small, but they happen to have preserved a precious gift of knowledge for human culture. To use the word does not mean that I'm putting them down, especially when it's a word that they use themselves. It just means that that's the word that is used. My emphasis is not on the stature of these people, but on their astonishing intellect, their amazing culture, their incredible knowledge of the rainforest in which they live, and the gifts that they have to give to Western civilization. So please don't believe that I'm putting the pygmy cultures down. Far from it. I think that they're amongst the most wonderful and extraordinary cultures on this planet.
Well said, Graham. Just a few more minutes to go, so I want to take the time again to talk about your very special conference and where people can go. On your website, of course, you've got information, but again, when will it be?
Well, there's two events that I'm speaking at. One is the CPAC conference, which is looking at precession and the rise and fall of civilizations, and that's in Sedona on the 12th of November. And then the second one is in New York, New York City, at the Chapel of the Sacred Mirrors on the 17th of November. And that lecture will be totally devoted to my new book, Supernatural. And details of both lectures are on my website, www.grahamhancock.com. That's G-R-A-H-A-M-H-A-N-C-O-C-K. On the Supernatural page, go to the lecture schedule, and you will see precise details of these lectures and how to attend them. And if I may again just simply add, unfortunately, my book is not published in the U.S. yet. It will be published in the U.S. in 2006 in the bookshops. But it is available right now on Amazon.com. Just search Graham Hancock Supernatural, and it has just today been published in Canada. So it's available in the bookshops in Canada and on Amazon.ca as well. And again, all details of this are on my website, grahamhancock.com, on the page called Supernatural.
Graham, in 30 seconds, by being in this altered state, do they also have the ability to prophesize the future?
Yes. There is profound evidence of that, of future events being foreseen by shamans. And again, I do go into this in places in the book, and this is, again, something else that tells me that there's an area of human experience here that we in the West have neglected for far too long and that we need to rediscover. It may have vital implications for the future of the human race. We can't turn our back on it any longer.
Graham, always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely to talk to you and your callers.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on the next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.